Rusty Quill presents.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of the West Side Fairy Tales Horror and Lit Club. I'm your host, Tyler Bell. I hope you guys are doing great. If you're new in the West Side Fairy Tales Horror and Lit Club, we try to introduce you guys to new things. I talk about shit. I do reviews. It's all over the place. If this is something that's not interesting to you, go ahead and skip it and get right back to the fiction episodes. I won't hold it against you. But I think you should stick around. Today, we are talking to an independent author from across the pond in the United Kingdom, Paul J. Kearns. He is an author of three books: Special Operations Vampire Elimination Unit, Beasts of Immortality, Blood and Purpose, and The Hunted and Other Twisted Tales. He's going to be the second person that we've spoken to on this, and it's a great little interview. And it's a bunch of fun. So without further ado, Paul J. Kearns, everybody. Welcome, everybody. We are continuing the West Side Fairy Tales interview series today with Paul J. Kearns, author, friend of the podcast. Paul, do you want to introduce yourself a little bit?
Hello, I'm Paul J. Kearns. I'm a horror and dark fiction author. I currently have one novel out, which is Beasts of Immortality, Blood and Purpose, and a book of short stories and a novella which is connected to the novel. Cool. I'm from the north of England, in Bolton. Father of two, a dental technician by trade, but venturing out into being an author.
So you're a dental tech?
Yeah, I do. I make porcelain crowns.
Oh, that's awesome. That's typically a thing that is just in a horror story, but you just do it for a living, huh?
Yeah. Some of the things you see, yeah.
I'd imagine.
Pretty horrific.
But your books, they tend to be a little bit like more on the military side, I think, or am I crazy?
No, yeah, it's the Beast of Immortality and the Soldiers of the SOV. Sorry, I changed the name of it. It's Special Operations Vampire Elimination Unit. Is the RA militarized group hunting militarized vampires?
Hell yeah. So is that that kind of sounds like BPRD for those of you out there that like Hellboy? Is that something you're familiar with?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, like a secret organization.
Cool. By the way, everybody doesn't. Yeah. BPRD is the Bump in the Night. I can't remember how to say it actually, but it's the underground organization from Hellboy.
Yeah.
So in your book, what is your vampire, anti-vampire unit do, other than the obvious?
The leader of the group is called Andra Hudson, and she's a 5,000-year-old dragon woman who's been turned into what she is by the original vampire. The lead vampire, whose name is Rusar. So she wants revenge against him, but she wants to try and stop him because he's spreading vampires, trying to take more and more power over the world, you know, like quietly, like covertly, like insidious.
Hell yeah. So it's kind of like Is it just like a more action-y type thing or horror, a little bit of mix of both? Kind of like Underworld?
Yeah, it's like there's some quite horrific, gruesome fight scenes and stuff, but there's a lot of like them traveling about trying to outsmart the vampires. But the first book, The Beast of Immortality, is about these... What it is, these two brothers. The lead vampire attacks a woman who's pregnant and her two children. One's a vampire and one's a human. And it's them trying... It's the story is basically about them trying to get away from the vampires whilst the SOVEU is trying to protect them.
Hell yeah. So is this all set up in your neck of the woods, basically?
Yeah, it starts out in Manchester, which isn't far from where I live in Bolton, which is a small town, and Manchester's like a city, which is really close.
Gotcha, like a suburb.
Depends who you ask around here, really, because it's like there's Manchester and Greater Manchester, and people are always arguing whether Bolton is part of Greater Manchester or part of Lancashire.
Nice.
But it's like it just kind of moves around the country and stuff.
Hell yeah. So I've never actually been to Britain, like really in general. Is it like a real foggy vampire-y type place, or is that just all kind of like made up? Are your vampires walking around, you know, just like, hey, middle of the, middle of a muggy night?
Some parts, yeah, there's like some of the vampires are, not affiliated with the bigger groups of vampires. So you get some vampires who are just like, right, rogue vampires. And then you get like others who are part of the militarized units of different vampires. But it's a bit like if it compared to anything, do you know, like Blade?
Yeah.
Where there's like the real world where everyone goes around, like all the humans are doing what they're doing, and the vampires are like kind of working underneath that.
Yeah. So I get what you're talking about. It's that it's that early 2000s vibe. I miss that actually. Like now that you brought that up, it's like the Matrix, Blade. They all have that sort of like leather and sneaking around. Everybody's wearing sunglasses. everyone's way too good looking for being in a kung fu fight.
All the flashy fighting and stuff, like really fast and really clipped and stuff.
So yeah, it's please go ahead. Sorry, my bad.
So I'm 42 years old. So when I was like in my early 20s, that's when like Blade and the Matrix and stuff were coming out. And that's when I first started coming up with my ideas. And it's basically set around throughout the 90s and then like into the 2000s. And then towards the end of the book, it starts coming up towards where we are now in time, like 2022, 2023.
Oh, yeah. So are you like a vampire dude? You know, not quite literally, but like... Let me rearticulate that because in your guys' neck of the world that sounds like that might actually come off a little derogatory. Because I remember the quote unquote vampire people from when I was a kid, which are just like, you know, way too taking it way too hard with the wearing fake fangs to school and that. And if you did that, folks, no, that's perfectly fine. But how do you feel about vampires these days? They had their sort of semi-renaissance with like the 2000s. We had Blade and then we had other versions of Blade, Underworld, you know, and like, and I remember a bunch of those, the Van Helsing movie, those all kind of had a very similar vibe, but then Twilight and it was romance vampires. And now everyone's just like nothing, none. We did zombies after that and they're gone.
It's, when I was born, like when I was a kid, there was like Lost Boys and Near Dark. So I started out watching them, probably way too young to be watching them at the time. But then when I was like in my teens and my early 20s, it was all like, you say, like Blade and Underworld and things like that. So I was a bit of a, trying to be a goth, but not quite, being a metalhead, but not quite getting into the gothy type stuff.
Hell yeah.
But I knew a lot of people were into that, but...
I was goth adjacent when I was in high school too. It was I like your guys' aesthetic, but please give me just a few more feet.
But yeah, my mate was saying to me, my friend was saying to me years ago, like, there's this film coming out called Twilight, and he said it's about some books, and I hadn't heard of it at the time, so I went to the pictures with the girl who I was going out with at the time, took her to watch it. And the bit where he takes his shirt off and he's all sparkly, I was in that, pictures, and I just went, fuck off.
Yeah, that was that was the big line in the sand. I remember that. It was just 2007 or something. And everyone was just drawing fan art. I remember everywhere of like, their version of Blade hunting down Edward Cullen and killing him. I saw so many variations of that. It was like unreal.
Yeah.
And it is to the point that is kind of the other thing that happened in the 2000s is we did go from basic vampires. You know, you start with Dracula and then you throw in a little bit. You know, it's Dracula with a costume change. It's Dracula with a backstory change kind of deal. And maybe even Dracula's still there. But then we get into the 2000s and Underworld and stuff, and now we've got late stage Blade, and then The Strain, and you got vampires with different teeth. You got vampires whose whole fucking head opens. It's a virus. It's a curse. It's a curse virus, you know? What's your preferred vampire soup du jour? What kind of vampire do you like in your stories?
I like, personally myself, I like the more of like a monster rather than being like this European kind of, what do you call it? What they kind of made Dracula into in some of the other films, where he's kind of like dead suave, dead.
Yeah, like a European aristocrat.
That's the word I'm looking for. He's like, like an aristocrat type. I prefer him to be more like, you can fit into society, but when they're a vampire, they're more animalistic, more violent.
More like, like a Witcher vampire, you know?
Yeah.
Looks human, but then once it's go time, bat monster, rolling.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what I prefer, yeah. Because it's like they're like a wolf in sheep's clothing type thing, so they fit in. But then they just like can fit into society. But if you see them as they actually are, they're more, still look human, but they're more monster. Like you weren't mistaken for a human in the way they act.
So
is it just
like an act?
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
They look human, or like what's the, in your universe, what are our go-to signs? I get dropped off in North England. All right, I'm in the outskirts of Manchester. What am I on the lookout to make sure I don't get nipped?
The big lead vampires, and this is in the first chapter, so it's not really a spoiler, he's 8'4" and he's covered in scales, looks like a giant bat reptile type thing, and he's got big wings and he can fly. But he's a...
Just an average guy from Manchester.
Yeah. But if you would see him, they would look like... some of them look like normal people, or they look like, trying to be businessmen with suits on and stuff like that. So you wouldn't suspect them. They're just like a normal guy walking, like a man or a woman or a person. They just fit into society. But they maybe got like slightly lighter skinned and I don't know. You can't really tell that they're not humans until they start attacking.
Super sneaky then.
Yeah, super sneaky.
Yeah. It's like one of those, now that I'm talking about it, there is like, it's like there's like a little sliding scale from like low to high. And it's, in multiple vampire attributes. Teeth. Two sharp teeth. All sharp teeth. Completely mutated mouth. Where do you fall on that, Sked? Like, where do you fall on that?
I like the all sharp teeth because it's they're supposed to be like the two fangs.
Yeah.
But when you see the two fangs, if you puncturing them two into the artery in the neck, it wouldn't do much, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It would let a little bit of blood out, but not as much as, you know. Well, if it's an artery, I suppose it would square out, but but it's a. I do prefer it looks like they look like the all teeth. Not ridiculous, but like enough to like an animal, more like a a wolf with like fangs and then like smaller sharp teeth around them.
How about age? But
yeah, it's like
go ahead.
Age. If they're bitten, they can be any age, whatever they are, but my vampires are more like the more alive. They don't die, you know, like, say, Interview the Vampire, where they die and then they come back. My vampires just turn into vampires. But if they can reproduce, like normal, like a human. So if they're born, they age five times faster. So a one-year-old baby vampire will look like a five-year-old human child. And by the time they get up to the age of 25... they kind of stop at that age, and then that's just the age to stay at.
They just mature kind of like an animal, just like straight to maturity.
Yeah, they grow a lot faster, I wouldn't say like a dog, because dogs grow up really quick, don't they? But like say like a chimp, maybe, chimpanzees, where they get to about 10 years old and they fully mature by that age.
This is another thing on the sort of sliding scale of vampires things, in control they are of sort of like their bloodlust and whether you even become a vampire. Because I do remember we were talking about the 2000s and there was that moment in like the mid 2000s where everything started to like merge into the zombie apocalypse genre that started to become the head. And then you started having a ton of zombie vampires. They'd be like, these are the ghouls. But like, it'd just be like one vampire bites a ghoul and then the ghoul will cause like a 500 ghoul outbreak. And I'm like, this is zombies with vampire teeth. I'm not always a huge fan of, but it's not the worst thing.
Yeah. No, yeah, I don't know. In my stories, if you're bitten by a normal, like a human, like a maid vampire or a barn vampire, you have to then drink their blood as well, like Dracula. But if you're bitten by one of the vampires, which has been made by Lord Rusar, like the lead vampire, they can then turn a person into a vampire with one bite, just because they're more connected to the original source.
Mm-hmm.
Is that a bit like, what's it called? The Stephen King one, Salem's Lot.
Salem's Lot. Hell yeah. Great.
Because he's like one lead vampire now. Yeah.
Stephen King kind of picked up vampires and then set them down permanently, you think, for like 40 years. And then he's like, fucking shit, I'm going to bring these guys back for Dark Tower.
Yeah.
So I guess there's been vampires the whole time, but also Pennywise. That man's got a mixed bag of a multiverse.
But,
So what do you know, like a vampire, dude, when a vampire is around for a long time, okay, how do you beat the boredom? Is it just like, you know, like really after a certain point, just eating people becomes like your 9 to 5. You got to do it. You wake up every night, you go out, you kill a guy, you go back to bed. Like what else is there? What sort of drives the vampire spirit?
They start their own businesses. They put in money into banks. They invest in, making out that the same, the different people, the same family throughout time and stuff like that, and investing in different things, different companies that are getting, like you say, like your Googles and stuff like that, and Amazon. There were people who've got a lot of money invested in things like that, and it's one of them is he's invested in like cybernetics and medicine, and he's trying to make vampires able to live in sunlight. So he's doing a lot of experimentation on things, and he's like cybernetics and implants and stuff. So, but there's some like that, and then I've got like a biker gang who are just like, just going out, having fun, just enjoying being, I wouldn't say they're like the Lost Boys, they're more like,
the Sons of Anarchy, kind of.
Yeah, they're just like a biker gang who will live forever, and they're having fun while they're doing it.
That sounds pretty fucking great, actually. And there's another thing in the modern vampire mythos, you know, vampires that do drugs. You go back in the day, vampires were just like, I can't eat anything. If I want to taste a little bit of wine, I've got to put like half a thing of blood in it. And then Blade, wonderful, sociological keystone, cornerstone of creativity that it is, they invented blood cocaine, which is the funniest fucking thing I've ever seen in a movie ever. When you're writing vampires, or when anyone's writing vampires, you like a vampire story where the vampires are like doing drugs, involved in the vampire underworld. You know, you've got like V in the True Blood series. Obviously, I mentioned the blood cocaine thing. You know, do you mess around with that sort of stuff, or what do you think of that?
Tell you the truth, I've not really written anything like that into it. They can't drink wine and stuff, so it's I don't know. I don't think I've really written anything like that into it. You know, like if someone's drunk and they drink their blood to get drunk, I've not put that in, but I've got a group, there's one that vampires runs a club where they've got like a menu of different bloods, and they've got the people and the actual different names of different people who give the blood willingly. But I've not really thought about drugs, to tell you the truth. I mean, I'm not for that in.
You're going to have to give me a credit for that one now. No, I'm just kidding.
But, yeah, for put it in.
Yeah, that's the old, that's another one of the classic vampire standbys, you know, is it, are we going to, How are we going to like divvy up the blood? You know, obviously, I think all of them agree, no dead bodies. You know, you can't drink any dead blood. How bad that is for you seems to change thing in, thing out, you know. But then if you go really back far, it's like virgins, only virgin ladies, maybe virgin dudes as you get a little bit more to that 90s swag. You know, we start getting some Anne Rice in there and boys biting boys. But then after a little while, you start breaking it down. Like, okay, I'm only drinking AB positive. Like, I'm an O negative immortal soul. You know, or you know, so how do your vampires, or how do you think vampires should approach eating, so to say, if they want to be snobby be a little picky?
Some of like the more higher end vampires don't drink from anyone. They only drink from certain people. But I've not really read anything in the way it's like a certain blood type or anything like that. But they're more like, they'll have to be people who be clean and stuff. They won't just pick on people who are on the street and stuff, like homeless people or anything like that, or people who are addicted to drugs or anything. They have to be like, what would you call it? Like prime.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, get like,
yeah, so you'd be grade A beef, yeah.
Yeah.
Certified, drug-free, and we also found this guy's got property tax assessment. So, you know, he's doing good. Works out a little bit. You know, that is kind of like, when they you buy one of those high-end Wagyu steaks or whatever. I've never done it, but I've seen it done on TV shows. And they come out, they bring you like this this cow's life story. And he was born in the Fuji Highlands. Massaged three times a day. He only drank water from two artesian wells. I'd be mad. But, on to like fighting vampires, even. Obviously, your whole thing is anti-vampire action, you know. How do you fight vampires in this one? Are you a stake to the heart guy? Are you a wood bullets? Through the heart is fine garlic. Where does it fall on the scale?
Like silver is one of the things. Like all the bullets are silver and the blades are like silver plated.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it's like it's like supposed to be a pure element into it, isn't it? So it's like if they shoot with bullets, they can shoot anywhere really, as long as it. Mostly towards like the chest or the head, and if they decapitate them with the silver blade or whatever kind of weapon, that'll kill the vampire as well, and they burn up. You know, like most vampires, they'll burn up into ash.
Yeah.
But there's certain, like, so if they take their arm, like. Chop an arm or a leg off, that'll grow back eventually. But it's if they get like one of the vampires gets a shotgun put in his mouth and pull the trigger and it just destroys his head. And that's a kill, you know what I mean? He's completely gone after that. He's not coming back because you can't come back from no head.
Yeah. Then that's always been a thing too. What really counts? I remember an ancient Adult Swim skit. I don't know if you know a Robot Chicken, but it just shows this guy fighting a vampire and he shoots it into pieces with a minigun, burns it in a furnace, the pieces in a furnace, and then like snorts the ashes and like takes his shit and the whole thing. And then it's actually, he was playing a role playing game with his friend the whole time. And the guy says, no, the rules say only a silver bullet. And he's like, come the fuck on. Like at what point? And I always appreciate that, especially when it comes to beheading, because, beheading is specifically, you know, severing through like the neck and all that sort of stuff as like a definitional thing. But like, what really is killing the vampire in this case? Is it the removing of the brain? So, like, in that case, like, if you dropped an anvil on their head, Looney Tunes style, and just knocked their brain into a pulp, into their chest, do you get to come back from that? You know? Like, where do you draw the line sometimes? And what am I... Oh, sorry, go ahead.
Like, if you destroy the head, it's like... Depends on much the head you destroy, but they've got to. Depends how strong the vampire is as well, because as they go on, the vampirism gets weaker and weaker. So if it's like one of the top vampires, if they get their head like you say smashed with an anvil, as long as the head's mostly in one place, they will reform, they will regrow. But if it's it's like if you just destroy some, like destroy the heart completely, destroy the head completely, that's it. They're dead.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And so yeah, like that's a thing. Also, UV light. I know. I like that. You know. I guess because people get sunburnt by UV rays, and it's basically the only ray that's not present in unnatural, like phosphorescent lighting, whatever the hell, the lighting in your house. In modern cities, people say, you know, the UV light, that will burn a vampire. Are you a UV light guy, or do vampires not fear tanning beds in your universe?
No, they don't fear. They've got no fear of like tanning beds or UV light. It has to be direct sunlight.
Yeah, I appreciate that too. I always kind of thought the UV light was a little bullshit. I appreciate it in like some video games and stuff, you know, like Dying Light. It's kind of okay because those things are like actually UV sensitive. But I feel like for a vampire, it is supposed like the whole ass sun. It's like literally just a star that we're way too fucking close to, just obliterating you. I like that better. But because also the UV light is never that cool. It's always the like, they always got to hit it. Whenever you turn on a UV light in a vampire movie, it's going to make the bug zapper noise, you know? Yeah. And they start smoking and shit, which is fine. You know, it is what it is. And then you get the little burnt face makeup kind of thing, which is fine. But I would rather you just do that with like flamethrower or some shit. That's the good stuff.
Yeah.
But I really like fucking out there in the sunlight, just full on vampire detonation. Like when one of them puts their hands like half into the sun and it goes like, and you're like, you get a little bit of smoke. No, I want it like an eraser. Fucking just absolutely chopped off. But that's only mine. How hard? That's another vampire sliding scale. How hard is the sunlight allergy in your universe?
It's most likely like one of the vampires. One of the Vincent, who's one of the main characters, who is one of the brothers, who's a vampire. He can survive in sunlight for about 2 minutes, but he does start smoking. Whereas most vampires, if they're in it, if they get in sunlight, they burst into flames, they start burning. And there is one bit with UV, but it's like intense UV. It's like big UV bulbs.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean? Like there's no other light but the UV lights, and that does burn them, but it's like, it's got to be very intense.
Yeah,
it's
high level.
Yeah,
trying to simulate the sun, you know?
Yeah.
I appreciate that. No pulling a fucking... you know, one of those little ID checking lights they have outside of a club, a bouncer gets you with. Like, okay, yeah, you shine that in a dude's face and he catches on fire. Like, oh man, 2,000 years, but shit. Don't check my ID, bro. That'd be hilarious. That'd actually be a funny thing. Now that I think about it, if you're going back in time and you can make a Blade movie, this is, I don't know how they didn't think of this, but when they have you build people checking your IDs, if you're trying to get into the vampire club, instead of checking your ID, they just shine the little UV light and it goes and smokes you. And you're like, okay, you're in that. How the fuck? I just came up with that. How did no one else think of that? That just makes so much sense. Especially when all those old Blade movies, like half of every movie takes place in like five different nightclubs because they did the one thing with the fire suppression system shooting out blood during the, and everyone's like, okay, that's the coolest thing that's ever going to happen in a vampire movie ever again. We've decided every single Blade movie has to try to do that again. And so, go ahead.
Sorry, what are you going to say?
I was going to say, what is the nightlife scene in your world?
These a group, the group of biker vampires, they catch their victims. They go into clubs and one of them can, glamour. So he can make people believe that he is, they'll believe whatever he says. And he tells them that they're a part of a rock band. So the people go back with him thinking they're going to have like this great night, and they all end up captured and eaten. And one of, there's a vampire called Gilad, who's one of the original vampires. And she owns a nightclub. I can't remember what it's called now. Something like the Bone Pit or the Boneyard, I can't remember. And it's, oh, the fight, I can't remember something. I've not read my book for a while.
No, it's all right.
There's a lot of vampires in that. These vampires who go clubbing, but then they've got like back rooms where they can, the vampires can go in there, but the humans mill about with the vampires because they don't know. The humans don't know that the vampires are in there. They just think it's like a rock club.
Hell yeah.
But it's like, this is what I got it from. My idea for the club was I went to, there's a club in, went to Canada years ago, and there's a place called in Toronto, and there's a club called, I think it was the Velvet Underground, and they had all like all the doors were black, you know, like the, where they have, they keep the drinks and stuff, like the bottled drinks with upside down crosses on, and it was like really, it looked really cool, but it was a little bit not cliche, but like in a cool way, if you know what
I mean. Yeah, it was that vibe. What year was that? Was that 2000s?
Ooh, what was that? That's 2005.
Like 2005. I feel like that was that era with the cool themed clubs. You saw them in the movies, and even if you go back to the 1990s, you had some like cool thematic clubs. I don't know what changed, but even in America, that shit's fucking over now. All the clubs that you get at best. The theme of the club is what if this club was in the 1990s, but it wasn't one of the cool 1990s clubs. It was just what this, but fucking with like that old drink pattern, you know, the maroon and green teal stripes on shit.
Yeah.
We're going to put a stack of TVs in the corner and play Family Matters. That's what you get for fucking ambiance. I know I might not be cool anymore. There's a very strict possibility there are dope as fuck clubs. I'm just fucking not going to them because I'm in my 30s.
I've not been to a club for a while. There used to be a big one in Manchester called Gillies Rock World, and it was like about five or six different rooms, all different types of metal, and that was in the early 2000s. Early mid 2000s, and that was really, really cool. But it was like there was a lot of vampire gothy type people going in there, and then that shut down and got turned into a Tesco, which is a supermarket. Makes me sad every time I walk past it, thinking what it used to be, and it's like a supermarket now.
That's fucking rough. It's kind of the opposite one. Where I live. It's just I live in the Midwest, basically Appalachia Midwest area of America. Which, if you don't know that much about it, is like the economic downturn central area. You know, so all of the old stuff they're not building any new shit. So things like grocery stores, churches, factory, all this shit is going under or has been abandoned for so long that it's super cheap and people are putting clubs in there now. One of the nicest Mexican restaurants in our city is actually Noche, is in a old church that they refitted, and it's all super nice now.
Yeah.
Oh man.
Bolton's kind of the same. It's it was an old coal mining town and cotton mill. They used to bring all the cotton over on the ships from America and bring it to Britain and to Bolton specifically because it rained so much. It kept the cotton moist. So it's all old buildings, you know.
Yeah, I mean, cotton and coal, that's like the two most 1800s industries you can mention. It's that, and then like maybe a fish cannery and like a stamping press, and you don't even know what they make. It's just full of children's flattened arms.
That's basically what it was like years ago around here. it was, there was people inventing cotton mills or cotton, one of
cotton gin,
one of the yeah, do you know, like, yeah, like a spinning jenny.
Yeah,
one of the blokes who was like one of the counselors where a lot of people, places are named after around here, invented I think he invented like a spinning jenny or something, they call it, something like that. And it's for milling the cotton into weave, you know, into
oh yeah, I got you.
Into material. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's like it's had its glory days a long time ago, and it's on a downturn. And it used to be, people used to come here shopping because it used to have a really good shopping centre, and even that's going to shit now.
Yeah, everything's kind of shrinking up, you know. It's moving and shifting, yeah. And it's real weird.
Yeah, it is.
In my neighborhood, there's the most haunted fucking building you'll ever see. And I can see it from everywhere that I walk. It's a 14-story abandoned warehouse. Huge, literally 14 stories. And it was an ice warehouse. So, like, it's super thick. Like, you can tell that the building is, like, heavy duty. And I think it's actually too big to knock down, but it's completely abandoned. And it's just looming up there like a literal gigantic tombstone to industry in the middle of the city.
Yeah.
Fucking massive. They're trying to turn it into a thing. Like they're going to put, they're like, we're going to put condos and lofts in there. I'm like, I don't, 14 story ice building condo. the walls are 10 feet thick. And there's like missing old forgotten holes down to multiple other stories. That place is going to turn into one of those, motels where you check in and you don't check out. That's what I think.
It's like that. We've got there's an old building, I don't know what it is, in the town center, and there's all like old abandoned buildings around, and it's like they're trying to build things in there, like this foundry's being built in them, and this one, it was a club, and then it was a club for something else, and then it was like this there's a pub who tried to expand into having a nightclub, and that was in there for a while, for about 2 or 3 weeks, and then it's just kind of been abandoned again.
Mm-hmm.
And they're knocking everything down as well, rebuilding everything, but they keep surrounding buildings in like boards and stuff, knocking them down, and they're not doing anything. So the land's just sat there.
Yeah.
It's a real weird little old town.
No, yeah. That's where a lot of my stuff is set. Is in West Virginia, and it's the same sort of thing. The point where they were like, can you guys stop fucking knocking the buildings down? Because our downtown Charleston, West Virginia, specifically, where my wife is from, down in the middle of a little valley kind of thing, you know, real tight, small town. It's the capital city of West Virginia. And it is, there's a gigantic spot of the city where it's just all fucking flat, and it's parking lots for fucking stores and businesses that don't exist because they knock down the buildings. And they're like, oh, well, at least we'll have parking. We can charge for parking. Like, there's nothing to visit. the department store is already empty. You knock down the other 10 buildings, and we got homeless people everywhere, and he knocked down the one building where we could have just stuck them. They were in there. They were fine. Now they're just wet when it rains. What the fuck was the point of that? It's the last remnants of the like 1800s, early 1900s. They are sort of just kind of getting scrapped and you know, knocked down. It's a little flattened a little bit.
Yeah. It's strange, isn't it? It's like, it's the similar sort of thinking where we are as well as you are. They want to do stuff with the land, but they don't seem to have any idea what to do, or they don't have the money to do anything, but they want to knock the building down to make the land available. But then they just leave it.
It sounds like a thing, from like a comedy sketch. And they're like, well, it's really good land. It's great real estate. Great real estate. What are you going to do with it? I'm not sure, but it's great real estate. You know, it's great real estate. You just keep talking to each other. Everything laying flat around them. Just let a field grow back and just return it to nature. Maybe it's actually an ancient vampire, you know, out there. And he's just like, all right, what we're going to do now is we're going to shrink shit back because I really liked 1482. That was all the people we needed. We fucked up too many people. Shrink it back. he just wanted plasma screen TVs. Now that we have that technology, bring it back in. Knock down all those buildings. I want that field. I remember that field from 1423. I banged around in that. That shit was awesome. Bring that field back. So I think we are going to get into the area of wrapping this up a little bit. So tell me just a little bit about, projects that you're working on, stuff that you've been doing. Do you have anything coming up soon?
Yeah, I've got the second book. It will be Beast of Immortality. Arm to the Teeth is my working title. That's what I'm thinking of calling it. It's a direct follow-on from this book. Moves into it's like a series of what's going to happen, like the Alex, one of the main characters from the first book, is trying to make his way through the vampires, trying to get to Rusar with different degrees of success and failure, and then I'm working on that at the moment. I'm doing like the final edits, going through it and making sure everything's okay. So that should be out maybe towards the end of the year or next year. And then there's a third book, which is actually a prequel, which is about where Rusar came from, how he became the vampire that he is. And then I've got a book of like an anthology of, I think it's 11 short stories, which are about a bit of everything, really. Vampires, werewolves, angels, like fallen angels, ghosts, a bit of everything in supernatural. And I've got, so that, if I get that side out, that could be out sometime in the next year or two. Just getting time to edit it. And I've got an idea for a zombie thing, but I don't know, it's not quite working at the minute. So, I am trying to work on that, and then I've got a character who is a he's like a bounty hunter, but for the strange and unusual. Not necessarily like werewolves and vampires, but like he investigates strange phenomena,
nice,
of all sorts. And I've got an idea for a story about him with hunting down another character I've already written. But I'm not, it's an idea. It's not coming to fruition yet. It's not coming to anything of, it's all still in my head at the minute. In my head, sorry. But I write really slow. So I've got all these ideas, but I'm working constantly on something, but I've never really, I just need the time to sit down and write, which is strange because in the pandemic, I had loads of time and I got loads of stuff done, and now I'm back working. I can't work on anything.
Hey, that's the great limiter. You know what I mean? It happens. So everybody, yet again, this has been Paul J. Kearns. Paul, where can we find your work? Where can we find you on the internet?
I am on Instagram quite a lot, where I am Paul J. Kearns author, all as one word. I'm on Facebook. If you type in Paul J. Kearns author, you should find me on there. I'm on Twitter, but I don't really go on Twitter. I think I missed the bus with Twitter, because I can go on it, but I don't really know. I never know what to put on there. And I'm on TikTok sporadically, just like little bits and pieces. And if you're looking for books, if you go on Amazon and type in just my name, Paul J. Kearns, it'll come up with my book, but it'll come up with other books which are other people called Paul Kearns, but I'm the one who's writing the horror fiction, not the scientific stuff and the architectural stuff.
Yeah, yeah. I think I saw one of the other Paul Kearns is like a quantum physicist.
Yeah.
you kind of got your Googling set up against you for that.
It's a bit demoralizing when you go on Amazon and things like that and type in your own name and it comes far more intelligent. And you're like, oh, well. The namesakes are a lot more intelligent than I am. But I've got on my Instagram as well. If you go on there, it's got a link tree.
Don't worry. We'll throw a link down there in the thing. So
yeah.
Yet again, everybody, this was Paul J. Kearns, author of SOVEU and The Hunted and Other Twisted Tales. Thanks again for coming on and sitting here and talking to us, Paul.
Thank you very much, Tyler.
Well, everybody, thank you very much. That was the interview, and I hope you all enjoyed it. Go ahead and check out Paul's stuff again. That's Special Operations Vampire Elimination Unit, Beasts of Immortality, and The Hunted and Other Twisted Tales. And, you know, if you end up enjoying them, if you have a good time, let him know. Throw him a review. And speaking of reviews, go ahead and throw us one on the iTunes. If you like this, if you like the fiction episodes, pop in, pop by, hit us with that 5-star, give us a like, give us a shout out, give us a holler, and tell us how much you fucking enjoyed this shit. I bet you loved it to death. if you enjoy the author series, especially, let me know. Obviously we're starting with some small names. And we will continue with small names, but hopefully I'm going to try to get some bigger ones in here just to kind of mix things up. But I want to keep this as a permanent space, I guess. It's just a statement of purpose to kind of just shine a light on random small authors that I come across. Paul was great. This was a blast. And I look forward to new episodes of the West Side Fairy Tales coming up very soon, as well as new and interesting Horror and Lit Club interview series episodes and regular Horror and Lit Club series episodes. This is what the feed is, man. I'm starting to get into it. I kind of like this. It's a good vibe. I know it's a lot different than when a lot of you guys started, but you know, you kind of grow and you change or you wither. And I was getting a little bit burned out, a little bit tired of the old formats, and I like this change up. I like talking to other people too, because it takes a lot of the weight off my shoulders, and I end up not re-recording a lot of things when I'm actually having a conversation with somebody. It's much easier. But if you like what we're doing here and you want to continue supporting the podcast, hit us up on Patreon, patreon.com/westsidefairytales. I completely lost my train of thought. And find me on social media at WS Fairy Tales on YouTube or on Twitter, West Side Fairy Tales on YouTube, and just search West Side Fairy Tales and find the platform that's comfortable for you. And say hi, hit me up, and we'll all get together and we'll make more of these things. And thank you as always to my patrons over on Patreon. And everybody else that's out there listening in podcast land. Much love. Look forward to the new episodes coming up. And until next time, as always, stay safe out there. Something's not quite right in the quiet mountain town of Targrady, West Virginia. Months after a local teen was lynched in the dead of a hot summer night, two men stand charged with murder in what the majority opinion considers to be an open and shut case. But Adelaide Stevenson, a young crime reporter from Charleston, is finding out the smallest cracks in the official narrative run far, far deeper than she could have ever expected. Join Adelaide in West by God as she navigates small town secrets, the dubious ethics of her own profession, and the dark whispers of an ancient creature, known to some as the Witching Woman, who prowls the shadowed hollers that lie between night and nightmare. Sent on overnight assignment to cover the start of the trial, Adelaide quickly realizes the story she's been told, and been telling, doesn't make sense. Cryptic assertions of a concrete alibi are emailed to her by the family of the accused. Nobody in town seems comfortable discussing the basic facts of the case, and the murder she's been writing about wasn't the only tragic death this summer. Adelaide extends her stay against the wishes of her editor, and her investigations take a complicated and dangerous turn as she discovers the true depths of the mysteries surrounding Targrady. The only real evidence from the night of the murder may lie in the hands of a notorious local crime family led by an enigmatic woman known as the Fetid Queen. Local authorities seem to grow more hostile by the hour, and even Adelaide's own career might not survive this assignment. Featuring an eclectic cast of characters ranging from violent and horrifying to outlandish and fabulous, West by God is a must-read novel for anybody who enjoys Twin Peaks, Stephen King, and all the creepy places you find just off the path in the woods. It is the debut novel of Tyler Bell, a USMC infantry combat veteran, former crime and courts reporter for the Charleston Daily Mail, and creator of the award-winning West Side Fairy Tales horror and dark fiction podcast. Due for release by Henlow Press in October of 2023. Learn more at westsidefairytales.com/westbygod.